Hello, my name is Ray Jefferson, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. On this program, we hear about the latest in arts and culture in our city. Today, we'll hear from Dr. Tyra Lindsay Warren, founder of the new Waco Family and Faith International Film Festival. She stopped by the studio on January 16th to tell us all about this new event. Later on, we'll hear the segment David and Art with David Smith. Let's kick things off with a Creative Waco update. Fiona is here to talk about an arts consultation that could be the next step in establishing Waco's cultural identity. How's it going, Fiona?
Really well, thanks, Ray.
So before we even get into the details of the consultation, what do you think is missing from the current artistic and cultural scene in Waco?
A portfolio of facilities? Well, quite a lot, actually, for our downtown area, because one of the things that we've learned over the 4.5 years that Creative Waco has been in existence is pretty much every performing art form is constrained by lack of facilities. We have some really fantastic performing arts facilities on Baylor and MCC's campus. Of course, we have the Civic Theater and we have the Hippodrome. But really, for people that want to do things over and above what is currently offered, there really isn't anywhere that you could bring in, say, a touring show. We don't have anywhere right now for kind of middle-sized performances. And of course, you know, one of the gaps that we're seeing is in terms of the economic impact of the arts. We did some research a couple of years ago that showed the economic impact of different kinds of arts and cultural events. And what we found is that when something happens in our downtown area, there is a considerable amount of money that is spent on things like going out for a drink or having a meal, going shopping before or after an event. And those things don't happen if all of our activities happen outside our downtown core. And so there are a lot of reasons to think in a very joined up way about what it is that we need downtown. So we have been working with City of Waco. They've engaged Keen Independent Research, and Keen are looking really at three things. They're looking firstly at what is the current need. Who are the organizations that have capacity needs that are not yet met by the current infrastructure? And also that's looking at the other side, at the audience side. What are the untapped audiences? What is the potential for increasing the level of output and activity in a sustainable way in Waco? So that's the first thing they're looking at. The second thing is, what are the things that could be happening in our community that can't because of those constraints, because we don't yet have literally a stage where you could have a play or a performance that goes on for more than one night, for example. And then thirdly, what are the things that Waco could potentially become a national or a global leader on that would really be transformational for this community and would bring people in for certain kinds of performances? So they're really taking a very joined up approach to that. Then they're looking not just at the facility needs and, you know, all of the other things that are planned and potentially that exist within what we already have, but they're also looking at what does it take to operate all of the kinds of things that you need for a thriving city. And where does that money come from? What is our capacity as a community to be able to run performing arts?
Wow, that's a lot.
It is, yes. They're very busy.
Yeah. So what exactly are they doing to gather that kind of information? Is it a lot of just like meeting with different people in the city, or are they doing surveys? What kinds of things are
they've
happening?
Met, they've now come twice, and they've met with all kinds of community leaders, you know, over different kinds of meetings, you know, some about economic development, some specifically with performing arts organizations, Arts Alliance. They are actually inviting input from across our community. And one of the things that we really want to make sure people know about is there is a virtual workshop that anyone who is interested in their voice being heard in this process can get involved in that. So we're actually going to put the link for that online workshop into the blog post that goes with this program.
That was my next question, so that's great.
Yes, absolutely. We really want to capture opinions from across the board and make sure that those are woven into that process that that's the consultants awesome. Are looking at.
Cool. Do we have an idea of how long this consultation process will take?
Well, the virtual workshop is going to be live until the end of January, although I think, honestly, if you were to complete it in the first week of February, that would be okay. But the whole consultation process is due to be wrapped up by the end of the summer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they're working hard.
Yeah.
Fast and furious. And if you think there is someone they need to talk to, then again, put that in the virtual workshop. There's also going to be a link to... Even if you don't want to do an actual online workshop, which takes about between 5 and 10 minutes, it's really very short. But there's also a link to an email address, and there's a hotline as well. So people can dip in whatever way is most appropriate for them.
Excellent. And so to wrap things up with our segment here, what exactly will happen once we have all that information and have an idea of what it is that we need in Waco?
Well, hopefully they'll come up with some really solid recommendations about both strategy and very specific plans that we should be enacting. And then as they go along, they're having conversations as to how those can be enacted. So we really hope that by the end of the process, we have some really tangible ways forward and how to, how to resource those ways forward as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks for sharing with us today, Fiona. More of a good thing is not the way to describe great art. Here's David and Art with David Smith.
One of the most dismaying things that can happen in a city as its economy begins to take off is to hear of new businesses that are coming only to find that they're just duplicates of things that are already in place. We excitedly hear rumors of a new restaurant coming to town and then discover that it's not really new at all. There are already 3 just like it. I understand marketing and the way that businesses take advantage of what seems to be the overwhelming human preference for the familiar. We may want things to look a little new, to be a little different, but we really aren't that keen on the unfamiliar. If there's something we like, there's a good chance that we'll get countless copies of it, sort of like the business version of movie sequels, instead of something that, say, complements it or challenges us. Art at its best works very differently from that. Thoughtful artists have a tough job. They all exist within undeniable and powerful traditions that form a living background to the art they create. But at the same time, they know that great art thrives on originality, on being different, often strikingly so, from everything else. What sets masterpieces like Jackson Pollock's Lavender Mist or Igor Stravinsky's Firebird apart from the galaxy of mediocre also-rans is not their familiarity, but their bracing originality. It's a quality to which you must be open and receptive if you're to experience something truly meaningful. But lots of artists are susceptible to a similar herd mentality, just like restaurants. There was a wonderful cartoon in The New Yorker back in the 1950s that commented on the booming popularity of abstract expressionism. It showed a man up in his attic surrounded by dozens of bland abstract canvases that he had painted. His wife surveys his output. "Why do you have to be an individualist like everyone else?" is her exasperated question. About the same time, a critic named Harold Rosenberg coined the phrase the herd of independent minds to capture the essence of such profoundly unoriginal bandwagon jumping. It's a great phrase. In short, mimicking a form is not art. I like Rembrandt, but I don't want every painting in the museum to look like his. Similarly, I love Mozart, but I don't want everything I hear an orchestra play to sound like that. I like fried chicken a lot, but I don't want any more fried chicken restaurants. Nor do I want to interact with a work of art that's just a copy of some other masterpiece. Originality, that is, something that's basically unfamiliar when you first encounter it, is the critical component of great art.
You can find this and other episodes on our website, kwbu.org. Just look for David and Art in the Programs tab.
You're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. This February, filmgoers will travel from near and far to attend the Waco Family and Faith International Film Festival. The new two-day event will feature more than 60 films from around the world, and I'm here with festival founder Dr. Tyra Lindsay Warren, who's going to tell us more about what will take place on the big screen. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Ray, for having me.
So I always like to start things off with a little bit of digging into our guest's past.
Sure.
So you are from Cincinnati, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so how did you end up in Central Texas?
Well, I've lived all over the country, I should say. But I was living and working and marketing in New York City and for 13 years. And for the last 5 years, I was pursuing my PhD in marketing at Rutgers Business School. And so near the end of my program, within the business academic space, you interview for professorial positions the year before you graduate. So in 2016, I interviewed with Baylor University. And, you know, my husband was like, Baylor? And I said, Baylor. And he's like, and where is Baylor? And I said, Waco. And he's like, Waco? And I said, Waco. It'll be similar to Cincinnati. He's like, okay. And so Baylor was wonderful, flew us both down, and we both left like, oh, Waco. Okay. And before long, I received an offer to join the marketing department at the Handkammer School of Business at Baylor as a clinical assistant professor of marketing.
Excellent.
So I teach specifically advertising and digital marketing to seniors getting ready to graduate and go into the big world.
Yes, of course. So I guess that I'm sure those skills came in handy when you were preparing for the film festival and all that. So
a little bit. Well, you know, my students, as I shared with them this week, since it's the first week back in classes, that they get the opportunity to learn from not only an academician, but also a working marketing practitioner who has over 15 years and then some working in entertainment, advertising in New York City, sports, as well as the performing arts in most of the major cities for those industries. So Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York City. So I shared with them this week, they're lucky enough this particular semester to see their professor and this particular campaign for the film festival be revealed in front of their eyes. So we actually are discussing the film festival in both of my classes, advertising and digital marketing. So they can see the good, the bad, and the ugly as it relates to launching a campaign and market.
That's so cool. I would have loved that when I was in school. So what's your connection to film? Why did you feel that that was the best way for you to engage with the Waco community?
Sure. Well, I went to film school. I went to Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And if you and your listeners are not aware, Northwestern is one of the top film schools in the country next to NYU, USC, UCLA, et cetera. And so at Northwestern, I was being trained, I focused my training, if you will, on producing for TV and film. And while I was there, I did a lot of internships as well with Viacom in New York and the Stellar Awards in Chicago and a lot of other wonderful productions. But I graduated and received a prestigious fellowship with the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. If you're familiar with the Emmy Awards, they are the entity that produces the Emmys. And so I was one of 28 fellows that particular year that landed this opportunity to work in Hollywood and get a start in Hollywood, if you will. And I was placed at NBC in Burbank, working for the vice president of children's programming. So I worked on a lot of shows that you're too young to know about, but perhaps your listeners may, in terms of Saved by the Bell and all kinds of good shows like that. And then we also developed a lot of wonderful shows too. So while I was in California or Hollywood, if you will, I was being trained to be a a Hollywood executive, either TV or film executive. And so I went from NBC and then went to work as a motion picture literary assistant at Creative Artists Agency, also known as CAA, which is one of the top talent agencies in the world, along with William Morris and ICM and UTA. Worked there, and then after CAA, I spent the bulk of my time developing TV and film programs for Quincy Jones, David Salzman Entertainment, and we had a deal at that time with Warner Brothers. And so, you know, this week is always a fabulous week for me because the Oscar nominations were announced on Monday. And when I worked for Quincy and David, I had the opportunity and the honor to be a part of the Oscar awards that Quincy and David produced, I'll just say in the 90s. So I always love Oscar nominations because it always, you know, enables me to reminisce of being at the Oscar Awards. Yeah. So after I left Quincy and David, I was on my way to business school, but had a short stint with Babyface and his wife at the time, Tracy Edmonds, and helped get, and I was on the team that helped get their TV and film production company started as well. And then once I finished that, I started business school and then started a whole journey in marketing, working with Procter & Gamble. I was the PR director for Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, as well as the marketing director for the United States Tennis Association, and so on and so on, all in New York City. So film, I started in film because I believe in the power of film as a medium to transform lives, to open hearts and open minds. And, you know, I could go even nerdy on you. That's what I share with my students, and delve further into the theory of storytelling, which is called narrative transportation, and the power, the transformational power of storytelling that it can have on all of us. And furthermore, I have been so blessed to work for who I call my living legends in my career. So Quincy Jones, Judith Jamison, Babyface, Reverend Al Sharpton in New York City by way of President Obama's first term's education tour with Newt Gingrich, and then finally with Mr. Byron Lewis, who I headed up communications for his advertising agency, Uniworld Group, which is known as the longest standing multicultural advertising agency in the United States. So with those five living legends and being in such proximity of them throughout my career, the one thread that they all have in common is that they have worked very hard to present positive images of all people, if you will, in mediums and media. And so as one of their children, so to speak, I am continuing that to hopefully with this film festival and leveraging the power of storytelling to open some hearts and minds and some hearts, and just so that in this Waco community, we can talk to each other a little better, look at each other more in a positive light, maybe love each other a little bit more, and come together more.
Sure. So I'm sure that with this next question, that some of what you just said will inform that. But, okay. You know, how do you feel that the Waco Family and Faith International Film Festival is different than other festivals people may have been to, whether that's in our community or outside?
Sure. So when you look at Sundance or Tribeca or the New York Film Festival, as well as Cannes in France, a lot, or I should say the perception of film festivals, is that they are very highbrow, you know, yeah. They're only for the artistes, you know, not for the normal folk, if you will. Yeah. And this is not that festival, you know, this festival is truly for everyone. It is family friendly. You can bring your grandmother to the granddaughter, you know, at this festival. There's no profanity in any of these films. There's no nudity, there's no excessive violence, because we want folks to be able to come together and celebrate each other and their family. And then also, you know, we are promoting and exuding the spirit of Waco throughout this festival. So unlike a lot of those quote unquote highbrow festivals, we are creating and presenting a film festival experience. So with all of the films that will be presented at the Hippodrome, you'll not only see the films, but you also have performers performing, you know, that are local performers here in Waco. Melinda Adams, she's a part of our opening night. She's an awesome country singer. She'll be opening our Miracle in East Texas film block. Amy and Aaron Williams, who are a mother-son duo, they will be a part of our Celebrating Family film block on Saturday at the Hippodrome and entertain us. We even have some opera singers from the Baylor Opera Program who will be singing and performing. So we're touching, you know, every aspect, we hope, of the Waco community so we all can celebrate each other.
That's awesome. Okay, so I have to ask you, you do some singing.
So I do.
Will you be singing at this festival at all?
I am a jazz singer.
Yes.
Who has had the opportunity and the blessings to open up for Grammy Award winning jazz musicians, Jonathan Butler and Kirk Whalum, Pieces of a Dream, Roy Haynes, and perform at, you know, the Blue Note Clubs in Japan and so much and so on. So there may be an opportunity throughout those days that you may just hear me sing it. Note or two.
Okay, all right. So what kinds of qualities were you guys looking for when you were selecting films?
So we had a criteria, if you will. Our films are on this film database or platform, if you will, called filmfreeway.com. It's a typical film festival platform that Tribeca, HBO, everyone uses. And so within that platform, we were able to create our criteria, which were about 10 criteria that we looked at for all of the films, dealing with originality, production value, on a scale from 1 to 10,
okay.
As well as did this film exude faith themes, family themes, as well as multicultural themes. So we had a wonderful criteria, a wonderful curation team. Believe it or not, Ray, we received 1,688 films from around the world during our submission phase last year. And so I just can't even begin to tell you the hours
that's a lot of watching.
My team and I spent watching movies. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's been a blessing because not only did we program 2020, but we also programmed 2021 out of all of those movies. And we have half of our filmmakers this year are women.
Awesome.
Because we do want to, in our small way, impact Hollywood and present diverse voices and women and, you know, all that good stuff that Hollywood is just...
Yeah.
Not there yet.
Yeah, of course. So are there any special events that are happening beyond the film screenings at Hippodrome?
Sure. We have some additional participating venues that are hosting us, one being the Baylor Law School. They're hosting our Be the Change and Girl Power film block. And that's another thing. All of the films are categorized in a film block to make it easier for our visitors to pick what films they want to see. But we also have a Film and Faith Soul Sessions on Saturday that Tolliver Chapel Missionary Baptist Church, St. Albans Episcopal Church, the Family of Faith Worship Church, Carver Park Baptist Church, One Fellowship Church, and Greater Zion Missionary Baptist Church will be participating on Saturday morning using film as the entry point to discuss some spiritual themes that we all grapple with in life, whether it's doubt or fear or love or grace or gratefulness. So it's just, since I've been producing film festivals across this country since 2013 with the likes of Bishop Jakes, T.D. Jakes, and the Over the Rhine International Film Festival in Cincinnati, Ohio, this is different in that we're going out to the community and bringing films to the community. So whereas the tickets at the Hippodrome are $5, there is no fee for the screenings at the rest of the participating venues. Oh, awesome. We want folks to be able to visit, you know, St. Albans. If you've never been to the Episcopal Church, visit that. I'm curious to go. We want folks to be able to visit Tolliver Chapel if you've never been there. So they are free. The churches are excited about welcoming not only their current congregations, but, you know, it's a friend raiser, so to speak, too, to get new people exposed to different churches and different faiths and things of that nature.
Oh, that's awesome. So you just spoke about some pricing there for a second. Mm-hmm. So we have the free events that are happening outside mm-hmm. of the Hippodrome. You mentioned that at the Hippodrome, the tickets are $5. Is yep. that per film or per block of films?
Per film.
Okay.
So each film at the Hippodrome, you'll get to see a couple of competition films that lead up into the feature film. And then we also have an all-access pass for $50 if people just want to do everything.
Sure.
We want you to do everything, yeah. so you can get the all-access pass. Everything's available for purchase at the Hippodrome Theater, boxoffice.com, as well as the WacoFilmFest.org website.
Awesome. I guess to wrap things up, what do you hope that attendees will be able to leave having experienced at your film festival?
Well, one thing, you know, my husband Sydney and I observed since we've been in town is that, and again, Ray, this is just my humble opinion, but we've observed that African Americans, for some reason, don't cross the Brazos River, don't mm-hmm. cross that bridge. Latinos are in a section of town, and then the general market is everywhere else. And, you know, where we've lived in New York and Boston and Philadelphia and Los Angeles, Chicago, DC. For entertainment, you know, everybody kind of comes together, mm-hmm. you know, in big cities. And, you know, I hope with this film festival, it's a small attempt to bring people together for fun, for celebration, for community and love.
Yeah, that's awesome. Dr. Lindsay Warren, it's been a pleasure having you in the studio today.
Thank you, Ray. And Creative Waco is one of our sponsors. You know, we received their AMP grant, so we couldn't do all of this without them. So thank you, Fiona, Ray, Kennedy, the whole team, Luann. We appreciate Creative Waco.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. The Waco Family and Faith International Film Festival runs from Thursday, February 6th until Saturday, February 8th at the Waco Hippodrome. Visit WacoFamilyAndFaithFilmFestival.org for a complete film lineup and tickets. This conversation will be posted on KWVU.org. Visit CreativeWaco.org/blog for content related to today's program and a link to the festival website. Catch the next episode on Friday, January 31st, when we'll take another deep dive into the creative scene in Waco. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWVU. I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Thanks for tuning in.